Archer. Archer was the same way till he got a job in Tynemacou. He didn't have hardly any schooling there too. But he was just interested in what the guy and other guy was doing. That's just the way we work. And we just had to be like that too. Like when this Northwest was building this school, you know, when they told me, you're gonna have a lot of instruments to run this school. You know, after I quit working, the guys asked these guys, when you guys gonna start putting the boilers in? And they used to work till maybe 9, 8 o'clock at night. And I used to follow this boiler. Every job the guy's doing, they bring in a special man for it, what they're supposed to do. Like they put on this wing over here, they had each stuff, they had a special guy for it. Same at this school, when they were building this school. I had to follow that guy around, even I was off work. I wasn't even getting paid for it, because I had to run this damn place just by myself. And I wanted to learn more about what they're doing. And the plumbers and all, you know, I watched them plumbers. I asked them how much heat, how you has to do with the copper. And then, you know, you asked a lot of different guys, like the oil camp, like the way in this oil camp. Now these guys tell me different. A lot of things that I didn't know to yet, you know. And now I got it all in my head. A lot of guys come to us for brazing or anything. Now I can weld, braze, gas braze. What I all learned from the oil camp. That oil camp really helped me for working there and the guys that I work with, you know. But these guys that was working there wasn't just interested in it. They were just getting mad and quit and come home. And like one time, I was supposed to stay here 1 month, haul wood for my family. Pretty soon the plane came from Galena. I wouldn't mention the guys' names because they live right in here. But he was supposed to stay out there 1 month. Pretty soon their company sent the plane down from Galena and had to pick me up. They stayed here 3 days and brought me back out. He said the whole camp went out of the kitchen, went out of fuel, ran out of fuel this morning. No fuel in the kitchen stove. Nobody could eat breakfast. There was no fire. And the guy got mad and sent him down the road. He wanted to come home that bad. So he had to call me and brought me back out there. When I got out there, the roughnecks that came from the state, they started bugging me. Just got there for dinner time, 6 o'clock. I started eating dinner. The roughneck barged into the mess hall and he told me, how come our bunkhouse is cold? What you been doing all day? I told him, don't bother me, I just came in. I just came in just right before dinner, and I'm not just gonna run around the camp. And pretty soon this mechanic told him, this guy just told him, he just came back. And you cannot just get everything. He's going to rest up for tomorrow. We have a lot of work to do tomorrow.
The
way I said, the guy had a 3/4 inch pipe sticking out of it with the valve. All he had to do just stick the hose into his tank. But the guy didn't know what the heck it was there for. And a lot of them guys that was working in the village here, a lot of them had to come to me and had to have better schooling than upper school, you know, stayed in the missions and everything. Doesn't even know what is the size of the pipe, doesn't know how big the pipe is, stuff like that. You know, it's really surprising a lot of times, because they're just not interested in what they do, you know. They have good schooling, everything, they're smart. But now they're just, life is too easy nowadays. They're just, they went up the slope, a lot of them went up the slope. I could have worked in the slope when they first started. There was guys come down here, they fill out, tell me to fill out application. But not I'm the one who coughed the notification. Fast money up there, really fast. You guys, you fill out this application, you can get up there right away. It's right now. Because you have the experience up there, drilling rigs and everything. I told him, no. I got a year-round job. After North Slope pipe is done, I'll have no job. I'll have no job, and the jobs will be over. Right? And somebody will have the job, and I'll be out of job. If you tell me what you'll make is big money. And I tell him, I know it's big money. But I think I can just about make just as much in the long run as working at this school here. After the pipeline is done, it's done. But the school will be still going. So I told this parents that came down, you know. And he said, well, it's up to you. Well, let's take a break.
Yeah.
He left to have to leave his Edmund North's boy in here.
Trade his boy in for eggs, huh?
So he stayed with me 2 days that time.
That was Victor or Stumpy? Or?
I forgot Victor.
Victor. Gee, we just talked a lot about mining, or not mining, but maintenance and oil rigs and machine and everything. How about fishing when you... You told us when you built your first fish wheel?
Yeah. That's the one that me and my mother who was fishing with.
Did you fish before that?
Yeah, I was fishing with my Eddie before that, half brother.
Eddie Hildebrand.
Yeah. Well, that's where I learned to make my wheel too. But, you know, I thought to myself, we cannot stay with somebody else every year, you know. And we just have to do it ourselves, you know. And that's how we just stayed by ourselves. And that's, I was fishing down there before the oil camp turned it up about 10 years before that. I was fishing there. And I was all by myself. It used to be a fish camp there before. That was even before I was married. I started fishing there. And there was a old guys fished there, but they died. So nobody just didn't want to fish there anymore. So I just squeezed in there and surfaced, took it over. And since then I've been fishing there, and now I got a lot there. 6 miles down here. And my father wasn't from around here, you know. He was from Burn country.
Oh, where was he from?
Japan.
Oh, he's from Japan?
Yeah.
How did he get up here?
Well, the way he used to tell us, he worked it up his way up. He used to be a cook in a restaurant. And he used to be a cook on a boat. And he started trapping, but some old timers wouldn't tell him how to trap because it was hard. But he used to do a lot of things that what the people didn't know. Right up today, and I wouldn't say it though I'll tell you about. Well, we used to fish down here at 9 Mile Kings in the summer, and me and my brother, we were small. They tell us, well, we got to cut logs. We want to build a house, thin house. So, well, he didn't understand native or nothing. So he was to cut logs, and we built up a pen about 4 feet high, and pretty soon we started, he tell us to cut poles too. Even he was working on it, we cut poles. Pretty soon he had inboard 6-8 anyway, we came up and he got an old sheet iron. So brought it down. Pretty soon he put these sheet irons halfway and halfway out of the places. All poles, all nailed down, I guess. I don't know how he done it, but it's nailed down. Person, he was bringing a fish up that way, the guts and the heads. Of course, while we watch him, fish was running here. After we got through with the pen, pretty soon he started bringing live foxes home. Here he was, what he was doing, he was feeding them foxes in the summer and let them get used to that fish. And then he set traps for them in the summer, this time of the year, just in the summer, and start putting them in a pen back there, and the foxes are alive. And then we stayed there year round, putting there partly year round. But as soon as it's free, we put the net under the ice. We have to catch fish for the foxes, fresh every day. We have to look at that net every. Pretty soon that damn pen was just full of fox, huh? And just like you're feeding the dogs every night, you have to go back there and feed them. You know, you have to throw the fish in that pen. Pretty soon they're so damn tame. We got them so damn tame. They were just eating, picking it out of our hands. And that case was just, tell you the truth, it must have been about 20 foxes in that pen. And them guys didn't know how he caught that many fox right up today. Yeah, no kidding. And, well, by Christmas time, he starts skinning them, killing them foxes. Starts skinning them. And the foxes are well primed. What he left that place out for, where it's just all cracks. That's where the snow to get in, the fox prime. And where that thin is back there, where the grass is going to be, that's where they got to sleep at nights, to lay down. But every time when it snows, you go back there in the morning and put all that fresh snow, that's fresh snow that covers the, sometimes it snows too fast, and it doesn't go down into the cracks. So he just keep pushing them down and give them fresh snow. And if it don't snow for a long time, he just grab the snow and shovel the snow right on top of it and let the fresh snow fall in there, into the pen. And so that way they got fresh snow every day if it doesn't snow a long time. But right up to today, these people in this village doesn't know. And also for beaver. But these people, these natives didn't know. But that's what he was using. And he caught a lot of beaver for us to raise us to.
And he put him in a pen?
No, not the beaver. The beaver, he just, you know, he had to die after what he was using for. He caught a lot of beaver too then. Well, that's the only way he can raise us. We were just three in a family, that's all. We used to stay out in Oko too, all winter. All damn winter. We used to leave there in August. And shucks, we never come out till in end of May or something, ever when the river breaks up.
Where would you go on the Inoko?
Way the hell over Inoko. Oh, right below Vapu, what they call Vapu. Yeah, that's, I don't know. Well, he used to go up that way, trap. We stayed out there all winter.
But when he was just learning how to trap, the old timers wouldn't tell him how to do it?
Yeah, well, you see, that was a white guy like he taught me. Didn't want to tell him, you see. That was their superstitious, like, I guess, you know. But he laughed at them after that. Because he was a Jap too, you know. He said that he didn't want to. That's why a lot of people call us names too while we was raised. And it really hurt us too. And it bugged us too a lot of times. It bugged me a lot of times. A lot of times some guys gave us names and everything, you know. But that's how we have to still use our head to make a living here. You can do it if you don't use your head.
And what was your father's name?
Jimmy. Jimmy was his name. That's the son that I lost, that was his name too. That was his name, Jimmy Cannon. Yeah, he used to cook in a store of restaurant over here. I barely remember it. He was a cook in that restaurant. It was a restaurant there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was a cook in there, see. I barely remember. It was just like, I was just dreaming. But he was a cook there. But that's the way he made a living too.
Was he, was he born in Japan? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, he was born in Japan there and just came up, worked his way up, stuff like that. That's the way he came up, he said. He just worked his way up. I don't know how he left Japan. His sister was in San Francisco. He used to write to him. My father didn't have no school in Tours, see. I guess he didn't know how to write in American way too, I guess, you know, or something. But he was a good cook. Cook for a restaurant. Well, he used to cook some good meals for us sometimes.
That's pretty nice, huh?
Yeah.
Did he ever cook Japanese
food? Oh, yeah. That's how we eat a lot of rice right now. We eat a lot of rice. People bug us about it a lot of times. Even this nowadays, they're bugging my kids sometimes. Go home and feel bad about it, you know. That's just the attitude we got. We just can't help it, you know.
See, you know, that's going to make our mouth water because we really like Japanese food.
My mother was raised by Japanese woman.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I'm finding a lot of Japanese food.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to, you know, a lot of these greens, this wild spinach, what they used to call wild spinach. He used to just pick it from around here and the people just used to laugh at him, you know. But boy, after he used to cook it up, man, we used to just make a meal out of that. Well, we didn't have no money even he was living too, you know, we didn't have no money or nothing. He was just trying to raise us the cheapest as we can go, you know. And that way that we wasn't hungry anyway when he was he raised us. But after he died, like the way I said, there was no aid, no food stamps, nothing. My mother couldn't get no help, nothing, so we just struggled our way into where we're at now.
Well, what's your mother's name?
Annie Akata. Mm-hmm. She died of age of 83 when she died. Mm-hmm. She died in Canada.
What was her family name before she got married?
Gee, I don't know. That part I doesn't know. Yeah, that part I doesn't know.
Do you know where she grew up?
Well, she grew up around here, she used to sit. Like, she worked around Canada too, I guess, for a few years, I guess. And then she moved back down there and then she got married. I guess she was married twice, I guess, I don't know. He was married to that Bill Burke or something. That's how Eddie is my half-brother. Same mother, but different father. But my mother, somebody adopted Eddie, you know. Marta Joe adopted. He was a smile kid. He was raised with Harold Smilke at the time. Harold Smilke was adopted too, you know, that time. But I guess it was hard, you know, them days, you know. But like the way I said, the food was pretty cheap. That's how we made it. Like that time when my father died, the rats was only 50 cents, you know, 50 cents a skin. And lucky if my mother had 50 rats that spring, because him and my brother, they used to go out in one canoe. My mother used to paddle and my brother used to stay behind him. The water, like the way we were staying home, and you know, my sister was staying home too, and put little eating rats every day, you know. Sometimes they could kill maybe four or five rats. A they couldn't go very far after water, you know. And not like the other people. They come home with a bunch of rats and stuff. And that's how we just struggled our way all the way.
What was your brother and sister's name?
Arthur. Arthur and Rita. Rita is the nurse's age, you know. But Hershey, she was raised in Holy Cross, you know. So she had a little better schooling than what we had, her. And we had another sister down there in Holy Cross, was married down there. That's how she stayed with her sister, because my mother couldn't report to keep us home. We had to all work to try to make a living, you know. So she just stayed down there with my sister instead. She went to school right there. Also, we had to cut wood, store for store. Lucky them days, the stores was burning wood and everything. They were buying wood too, you know. And like the way we said, there was no snow machine. And if you got no fish for your dogs, you have to trade off for the fish to the trader for groceries in the summer. You have to buy that back again from them to feed your dogs. So you had just, and that's the best friend you had is your dogs. You didn't have no dogs, nothing. You're in the top shape. There was nowadays just all kinds of snow machines and everything.
Well, what other things do you remember about how you lived before your father died? You know, like trapping and different things you did.
Well, that's just the way we did, you know. We just stayed over on Oak all winter, and my father, I don't know how, but we were too small, how he arranged that. Pretty soon we seen a plane landed. We didn't expect nothing. We were just playing around, sliding down. Pretty soon we seen a plane landed right in front of the camp. Pretty soon my father had to fur. Pretty soon a guy came up. I don't know if my father knew he was coming, or I don't know how they arranged it. But what happened is, my father, that was after Christmas, maybe in January, I guess. Pretty soon, this guy came, plane landed, and pretty soon shook hands with my father, and we were scared, you know, we were small, and we just ran in the house. Pretty soon, my father brought in all his fur, what he had catched all winter. Brought in all his mink foxes in the cabin where we were living, and sold it to him. So we didn't know how much he got for it or nothing. But we had one little mink, me and my brother, put mouse ate up on him. So he gave it to us, you know, he gave it to me. And then he told me that I can have it. And so my mother fixed it up for me, sewed it up. Just made it pretty good, but it was small. So I got $7 for it. Gee, that was a lot of money, those $7 for it. So we kept that money all winter. And we came back out here, you know. Well, we have no place to spend it. And pretty soon my father, all we had was two dogs. Yeah, two dogs. And my half-brother was staying with us. And he came over towards Caltech. He started over towards Caltech with them two dogs. That's all the dogs, no trail. But he was snowshoeing ahead of them dogs. And went all the way to Caltech, brought back a little load of groceries with them two dogs, with whatever little stuff that we needed, I guess. But he brought back a good-sized load for them two dogs. He said he didn't have any trouble with it. But that's the only difference we had, me and my brother. We play with them every day. And when we left, they were just this small. We just didn't have no dogs, just pups, two pups we had. And by the in winter, they were just great hosts because they were just eating meat, what little we were eating. And we had, there was hardly any moose over the Onoco, but my father killed some moose. We had moose hanging there. And we were eating beaver meat, rabbits. So we had a lot of fun, but we never went hungry for quite man grub, you know. We had a lot of that food, I guess, but I didn't know what we had, you know. But our father or mother said, well, it's kind of slacked off on that stuff, you know, like if we're running low or something, they usually tell us to slack off on it or they quit eating, giving it to us. Well, towards the end of the spring, pretty soon we start getting bread. One slice of bread, they start cutting it for us. Before, we used to just help ourselves to it. And like when our father make cornbread, we used to call cornbread, he used to just let us eat, and pretty soon he started cutting it in slice. And she was wondering, how come he's doing that? Pretty soon he said that.
Well, we're no, wrong. I didn't, but, excuse us.
When they said that, we were getting low on food. That's it, I guess. Oh, that's not nice. I guess that guy came in the butt when he hired him. Yeah. I'm tired, I don't know.
I got a question about fishing. You know, I talked about fishing before. How about fishing in the last couple of years when it turned commercial? Do you still fish now?
Yeah, we still go commercial fishing. Well, we had a license in 1974, but it was really a poor year, actually. Really poor. All we sold was just a few pounds of eggs. 1975, we just sold egg roll too, that's all. 1976, that's when everybody's headed in, you know. Guy came in, name was Staniford, and he gave license to everybody. And then we start commercially. Then he was buying fish for 85 cents a fish. 85 cents. And then we have to rent a truck, $10 a trip to haul the fish up to the airport. Us, the fisherman, you know. But he had his plane up there. Well, he didn't wind at it right, you know. He didn't wind at it right, nothing. So he had them candy kids working there all night. That's all we was doing. But he made money. He was flying it out of here himself. You know, he used his own plane and everything like that. So it's from there on. It just went commercial fishing.
So what do you get now for your fish?
Oh well, this summer I had a rough summer. You know, I didn't done anything this summer. That's what we. The biggest hit of fish we got around here is when the 4th of July, around in July, that's just when the fish hits heavy. And that's just when my son drowned it, and we just put our wheels into the beach and we were searching around there. And then we were searching for 13 days. They were all fishing, all them guys were all fishing. We were all fishing while we were searching. So we were just last big year in the tree.
That time when you just sold fish eggs, that's when you met Edmund Lord?
Mm-hmm. The pilot was telling us that he's flying for Edmund Lord. I heard quite a bit about him too, anyway, you know. Where he is now?
Minneapolis.
He's still living?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. He's, well, you know, he comes close, but he's still kicking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I see.
He's had a couple.
Yeah, really bad.
But he's too strong. He's
maybe we want to take a break.
Yeah, do you want to take a break?
Yeah. 61, 50, yeah, I was watching there till 1963 in this Kentucky. Well, I wanted to trap too, but he was getting old and he was going to go anytime he thought, you know. But he's got a nice trapping area up there. He's got a nice trapping area. And I kept bugging him, you know, I wanted to trap beaver with him. So he finally made up his mind. He told me, go ahead, go with him. So I went with him. And so he told me, well, you kind of, we'll trap together, all right. But the further we're going to go up, we'll have two tents, he told me. And that last tent, you can, I'll show you the country around there. You could trap around there later. So I said, okay, I went to his first tent, stayed overnight. He stayed in there for 3 nights, putting beaver sets, come back. And I said, well, we're going to go on up. We went on up towards the Cayo Flats. And then we were going, pretty soon he told me, well, right here, we're going to make the camp. There was hardly any snow that year. You just lead your dogs right through any place. Well, I didn't know the country, me. And I had to wait for him. And so he told me to go right across the lake and find a portage there. I was getting tired, dogs was getting tired. And so I started snowshoeing ahead. So he told me, you see that spruce tree up there? I told him, yeah, we will head for that one. There's a trail right there. So we went on up. Make camp, and he said, we're going to walk around. It's just currently, it's like open country. And he told me, you go that way, and I'll go this way. And he, well, the first time I've been around there, but he told me, when you get on a hump, you look for birch patch, birch humps, you know. That's where the lakes are around there. And so I said, okay. So I took off. I got on one hump, pretty soon I see birch patch right ahead of me. So I took off to there. Sure enough, there's a lake there. I went to this birch patch and here was a beaver chewing, birch chewing. I know there's beaver house in there. Went out in the lake and I found beaver house way over there. Went to it, it was live. I put in one sight set. I know he's gonna put in sets there too. So, well, I found about 4 houses that day, and I came back to the tent, and he was there. He said they put in 2 sets to a 2 house. There's some more up at that. And I tell him just about where I went. He said, they know all that country. Tomorrow we're going to make a circle, he said. I'm going to break trail. See that guy, I don't know how he remember all the country and all. I hit my tracks where I turned back from. And I went back the same way I went. Well, I didn't want to get lost, you know. Pretty soon he told me, your trail should be in that lake. He told me, you went to that birch patch? I tell him, I didn't know. I couldn't remember. I told him, I didn't know. Everything looked the same for me. Because when you went to that birch patch, I think that's where you went. When I told them the lake, they were kind of lake, the lake was, you know. I kind of pictured the lake where it went, you know. When he said, it's right over there. We'll go there, we'll hit that lake, and we'll make shortcut to the tent because it's getting late. He said, okay. I told him, no, I thought, I was walking ahead of him, I thought to myself, hell, we're going to be way the hell off the tent. I was coming to this lake. Son of a gun, where I got bait. I head for this birch patch, you know. I didn't know where that birch. Here I was. I knocked down a birch for a beaver bait right there. I don't know how that guy remember, you know. And then I tell him, I put only one sight setting. You can put setting. Oh, he said, no, you can use all this. And then he tell me, well, make a shortcut that way. Too far to go around. I said, okay. I tell him, well, we want to make sure. He tell me, we want to make shortcut. Gee, in the Christmas, sure enough, he made shortcut all right. Didn't took us very long to went to the tent. And here we make a big bed for nothing. So the next year, they tell me, go ahead and trap around there where I trapped the year before. So I went up there by myself and I trapped it around there for I don't know how many years by myself.
Who was this man you went out with?
Kentucky. Lawrence Saunders was his name. He was pretty old too when he died. He had a nice big trapping area. That guy used to catch a lot of fur. And now it's just around there for nothing. He didn't have no kids. And he showed me quite a bit of his country around there. Nice trapping area for first trapping around there now. Part of it, but not all of it. His trap, he does good around there. Trapping marten, beaver. Them days there was no snow machine when we were trapping around there. We just used dogs. We just struggled with our dogs. But you're sure to come home with dogs, never break down.
Yeah. It's a good thing about dogs.
When was the last time you trapped a bear?
Jesus, I don't remember. Before I worked for this school, I was going to the cannery from 1964. I went to the cannery, $1.35 an hour. I stayed over there for good near 3 months that time. $1.35 an hour. I worked it there. And I wouldn't mention the guy who was the foreman there. He's living right in. Oh, that guy made me a slave over there. He had relatives and everything working there. And as soon as the overtime started, he knocked me off for the day. First year in the cannery that time, since I don't know. Since 1945 or 49. And after I got off down here, off watchman. And then the next year, I went back over again. And then I got a foreman job. Foreman job to take care. No, not the next year after that. Then the third year, I went back over. I got a foreman job. I was foreman there for 4 years. But the school was getting bigger. And then the superintendent over there sent me the salary, what I was going to make for it. He jacked up the salary. I told him that my last year, you know, it was getting bigger school for the wife to take care of, you know. So I told him, no, I just couldn't come over every year. And I think this is my last year. No, we jack up your salary. So after the first of the year, he sent my salary over. So I have to go back over and try one more. And then after that, I quit going over, you know. It was good salary. But the first year I went there, it was $1.35 an hour. No work around the clock when the fish was ready. What happened? They knocked it down. They brought a bunch of boys over from here, from this village. They all quit. That's why they knocked it down. $1.35 an hour. But now they go over there and they get make all kinds of money after I quit that place.
A lot of people from here still go over to the cannery?
Yeah, there's about a dozen, I guess. Everything works by electricity. Well, the cannery burnt down after I quit going over, you know. The cannery burnt down, they said, so they built new cannery. But now everything just worked by electricity, you see. It's just everything. If I go back over there, I don't know, I wouldn't even know what it looked like now, I guess. Yeah. So it's just everything changed, they said. Everything changed.
You know, I was still talking some, well, I mentioned about trapping a little bit. The other day you told us a story about when you and Eddie Hildebrand, last time you went out trapping.
Oh, yeah, that's what's called. His wife was living and his kids were small. We used to leave here in the middle of August. We used to go over by Holy Cross all the way around to go to Onoco, Mud River, they call Mud River. And we used to stay there all winter before his kids start school. And they remember how hard they were raised. And you see, not one of their kids are around here loping now after they got through schooling. They're all in Fairbanks working, all his parents. That's how hard, you know, how hard they were raised, see? Because their father used to work like hell for them, raising them. And that's, they remember, they were big, but they just wouldn't, I guess he kept one out of school for a year, but he was supposed to start a year. Guy just can't stay around here with a big family like that. Now they're all through with schooling now, they're all working for themselves in Fairbanks. Now he raised another boy, he adopted another boy when his first wife was living. He raised that one too easy. Now he just can't do nothing with that kid, now he had to kick them out. That's just how easy he raised it. And now this couple year ago, I was talking to his daughter. She come down. I told him how that your other brother, half brother, spoiled. See how he was raised too easy, get everything he wanted while he was raising, just like off the shelf. See, and now your kids were raised kind of hard. You wasn't hungry, but parents had to work like hell to raise your kids. And you see how hard you worked it. Now you're all working for yourself. And he said, that's right. That's right. That boy had been raised too easy compared to us, how it was raised. None of them are here. Not one of them. Just had three girls and one boy, but the boy died, shot himself long ago. And the three girls are all in Fairbanks working for themselves now. Never even come home.
Did you ever go beaver trapping with him?
Eddie? Yeah, we used to run 80 beaver houses. That's what I said. I was single yet. I used to work, stayed out the whole winter. That's how hard we used to go. I didn't have no job. Like the way I said, I was just lacking out school. And we couldn't get a job around here. But when I was, like the way I said, you see, I was just when I was thinking and working hard, you know, I thought to myself, if I get a job and if I work with somebody, I'll just be interested and put it all in my head and put it all together. Use the damn thing I taught, you know. Yes, I see a lot of these kids, like, I feel sorry for these boys, have got through with schooling, and there's all these does is just low. Like my son, I tell him, well, he's got a house of his own. He live on his own, but he used to drink like heck. Now he kind of slacked off. But like the one that I lost, and I told him, he used to drink quite a bit. He didn't listen, you know. He just would like to pull around and go, well, he drinks and stuff. God, I'm doing it.